Do you know how much fiber you're getting? Do you know where you're getting it from? Do you know what it means for your body, your health, your longevity, everything about you? I'm Lee Rayburn, and our next guest is a UW Extension specialist and associate professor in UW-Madison's Department of Food and Nutritional Sciences. Beth Olson joins us once again, and if you have questions about fiber, stories about getting enough fiber, what it takes, where it comes from, you are welcome here at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Beth, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So let's start with the different kinds of fiber, because not all fiber is the same, is it?
No. And if you look at a packaged food that has fiber, they'll list the different types often. So there's total fiber, but there's also soluble and insoluble labeled. And the soluble is a more viscous fiber, and the insoluble is less viscous. And they have different effects in our GI and therefore different effects on our health.
Is this the important part, our gastrointestinal tract?
Yes. Decades ago, when I first got in the field and started studying fiber, we just thought fiber was roughage, just stuff
filler.
Stuff that went through, came out the other end and really didn't have
anything. Had nothing to do with anything with the rest of your body.
Exactly.
How long ago was this?
Oh, well, you're...
I'm sorry. That is the running time.
You're asking me. A few decades, we'll
so
just say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've come a long way in a few decades, and I'm sorry I had to use you to make my point. I apologize, Beth. But so it used to be we just thought it went in, it came out, and that's that. But since then, we've come a long way in understanding exactly the importance that fiber plays in our diet.
Yes. So even just in that passing through of the gut, it affects how quickly we digest and absorb our food, whether we absorb it all. It also feeds the bacteria in our gut, which we have learned are very important. Part of having a healthy gut and our health overall is very popular now, called the microbiome.
Uh-huh.
And they ferment some of the fibers and use that to replicate and outcompete bacteria or other things that wouldn't be good in our gut.
So we're talking about decades. In just the last few decades, we've understood the importance of fiber. But when we're talking about the microbiome, that seems like really relatively recent nutritional science.
It is. And it's just exploded.
And just starting too, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I mean, I think those of us in the field knew about the bacteria quite a while ago and began to realize, okay, this is important. But in terms of linking it to many of the disease conditions or to overall health, that's been more recent. And the explosion of the popularity of selling things to help your microbiome, that's pretty recent.
So when we're talking about soluble versus insoluble fiber, break it down for us. Which one do I want to focus on, or do I want a balance of both, or does it matter on what I'm looking for?
I think you want a balance. There's no requirement for one versus the other. And actually, most foods containing fiber have both.
Okay.
So there are some foods a little more rich in insoluble. That would be, for instance, wheat. Wheat products, wheat bran, wheat cereals, wheat breads. That's a particularly good source. Also, if you kind of think of that rougher idea,
yeah,
the skins of fruits and vegetables that you can eat, that would be a good source. Whereas the soluble is also in fruits and vegetables. So see, you can get both in one food.
Nice.
But it's also particularly high in things like oats.
Oats would be the soluble fiber.
Yep, yep.
And you kind of want a combination of both, but no matter how much I think I get, I'm probably not getting enough. And you know, you see it on packages in stores, high fiber, and you look for it in cereals and in your breads now, more common than not. But in your years of research, Beth, has our fiber intake changed?
Yeah, unfortunately not. You know, as we learn more and more, and especially with this popularity of the microbiome, I would hope our intakes would go up. One of the reasons it doesn't is our food patterns haven't changed a lot in terms of getting the foods high in fiber. So fruits, vegetables, the legumes, some of the whole grains, intakes of those are still well below what's recommended. And that's why I our fiber stays so low, too.
But I feel like we've been hammering on this for a long time. This part doesn't feel like anything new to me.
No, it's not new. And I think maybe that's some of what hurts us is, you know, people are like, well, I've heard that before. You know, I've heard fruits and vegetables and whole grains. Yeah. Beth said that a million times and every time she's been on a show. So it's not, I want to say it's not as sexy as some of the other things you see for nutrition and health. You know, eat this, take this supplement, you'll have nice hair. You know, there are a lot of ways to promote other products that we aren't as good at when it comes to whole foods.
Fiber supplements. I can still eat the same way I always have with a few supplements on the side, and I'll get my fiber that way, Beth.
Well, you would get your fiber in grams. You wouldn't necessarily get the same health benefits because fiber-containing foods, again, as I said, there's all kinds of different fibers, not just the soluble, insoluble, but there's different types within those categories that are different among foods. And the foods high in fiber bring along vitamins, minerals, antioxidants. They're often higher in water, lower in fat, just overall good for you.
Which is why you talked about them so much.
Yeah, exactly. You just won't get that with a supplement.
So could I... Supplements seem like the easy way. They seem like the shortcut.
Yeah, and they have a role sometimes. Okay. Sometimes working with a physician, someone may discover that they have an issue and it helps to take a fiber supplement. Psyllium is a very common supplement, often used for keeping regular.
People AKA who are Metamucil, I think you can get them in pills as well, but that seems to be the most common one.
Yep, and you know, for some people who are really struggle mm-hmm. not to be struggle with constipation. Mm-hmm. Something like that can be helpful. And other people use it actually for some medical reasons. If for some reason their gut's moving too quickly, psyllium, because it's kind of gel-like, binds up water, can help slow that up a little bit and make it a little bit more normal. So there are reasons people, usually working with their doctor, use supplements.
So it would be something to consult with my doctor with and make sure they're cool with it.
Yeah, and definitely drink water when you're doing it.
Okay.
It binds up water, so you want to make sure you have a lot of that water in there.
So we've got soluble and insoluble. You want both, but how much do I want to get, and what have we figured out in terms of recommendations?
Yeah, so the same organization, the same governmental advisory group that gives us our recommendations for vitamin C and calcium and everything else has one for fiber as well. Mm-hmm. So for women, it's 25 grams, and for men, it's 38 grams. The actual recommendation is grams per 1,000 calories that we eat. So if you're a bigger person, mm-hmm. the idea is you would be eating more calories. If you keep those fiber-dense calories, if you will, you'll need more fiber or take in more fiber. And if it's less, then you'll eat less fiber. So this would be common as people get older and maybe their calorie level falls a little bit. They might require a little less fiber.
Oh, interesting. Because for me, when I was growing up, fiber was a part of my grandparents' diet, but not mine. As a kid, I didn't think I needed fiber so much. But as, you know, older adults, my grandparents knew the importance of it.
Yeah, exactly. And kids do need fiber. Actually, one of the most common ailments with small children is constipation.
Yeah.
And having a high fiber diet
sure.
can help with that. So there are recommendations from the same organization for kids. Because it's based on, again, calorie intake and an adult marker of heart disease, lowering that risk, it tends to be a pretty high amount, and most kids are not anywhere near that. So the American Academy of Pediatrics uses a different recommendation. They call it age plus 5.
Okay.
So say your child is 5, they would be 5 plus 5, 10 grams of fiber for them. By the time they're 15, that would be 15 plus 5 is 20. By the time they're 20, so you see it helps graduate a child up in fiber level.
Until they get to the adult level.
So it's one way
like
to try
to... an awful lot of fiber.
Well, 5
what
or 10
grams. What do most people get? Do you have a ballpark yeah. figure? For adults, yeah. what do most people get for fiber in a day?
Average is between 15 and 17 grams.
That's
so you can
even,
see, yeah, if you're a man, you'd be less than half. If you're a woman,
about
not quite.
Half.
Yeah.
So what would you recommend to make up the difference? How can you... modify my lifestyle without changing it? Can I make a few improvements? Can I tweak a few things? I don't want to change everything, Beth.
Sure. And nobody wants to. And, you know, we always say do it over time. You know, don't go from 15 grams to 36.
Baby steps is a theme we've heard this week. A little bit at a time.
Take the baby steps. So you might just look at each meal. Okay, I have rice. I'm having a stir fry and it's on white rice. Mm-hmm. Brown rice would have more fiber.
That's it?
Yep. So, you know, you might start with just substitutions like that.
Okay.
You might consider some of the sources of protein that you have. Say something like meat.
Yeah.
It's an animal product. Fiber's only in plant products. Could you maybe cut the meat portion down a little and add a plant protein like quinoa or lentils or beans?
I feel it would be more affordable that way right now.
More affordable? Good source of protein, got minerals, great alternative. But the other thing besides the meal is looking at, can I just add a little here and there, and can I look at my snacks? So a common way I've thought about it is if you eat meat sandwiches, turkey sandwich, ham sandwich, every sandwich, look at whole grain bread maybe instead of white bread,
sure.
A slice of lettuce or a piece of lettuce, a slice of tomato. Right there, you've added a couple grabs.
Oh, you want me to make the whole sandwich right there. But that's like a full sandwich. That's what you would go to one of the sandwich stores to get. They'd stack it up for you tall and thick.
Yeah, so put on a bunch of vegetables. Sprinkle nuts or seeds over your salad. If you have salad, adds a little bit more. And think about your snacks. Now, if you just want to maybe upgrade your whole diet, if your snack usually at night is cookies.
Yes.
Maybe an apple.
Maybe apple cookies?
Not quite.
You got to try. Come on. Looking for compromise.
So there you get fiber, but you also get other nutrition.
How about apple with peanut butter? That's kind of a...
That would be a great one. You get a little protein with the peanut butter. It's got a little bit of fat. It'll empty slower in your stomach along with that fiber, keep you full.
Well, you kind of
it's actually one of my favorite snacks.
I was going to say, you kind of have a deal with that one.
Yeah.
I could move to
it's
that.
It's one of my favorites, yeah.
All right, I like where we're going with this. Celery with a little bit of peanut butter, that could be a thing
exactly.
As a snack.
Yep.
You got a way to replace my potato chips?
Oh, gosh.
You mentioned nuts before. I kind of feel like...
Yeah, you could look at also like whole grain crackers.
Really?
They would have some fiber in, you know, still get some crunch, you know, but not have as, maybe not have as much fat.
I feel like you want to put a fruit or vegetable on top of that.
Yeah, that's where we're always falling short, fruit and vegetables.
So things like meats and cheeses aren't going to cut it when it comes to getting any sort of our daily fiber content?
Nope. Animal products just don't have it.
Shoot.
They have their own role, you know, are good for us, high in protein, but nope.
I've got a question here about GERD. And whether or not certain high-fiber foods can trigger the GERD-like symptoms and whether or not there's a way to compromise these two.
Okay, that's a little bit more medical question because GERD's a medical. So I don't know for individuals. That'd be something to ask their doctor. If your stomach empties a little slower, that can contribute to heartburn.
Okay.
So, but overall, fiber makes your whole gut move along. So I think in the long term, it may be helpful in that it just keeps things moving. In the short run, maybe you need to be a little bit more careful about not taking in a big bolus of fiber at once.
We are going to be talking about having too much protein at the bottom of the hour. Beth Olson, I'm curious, is there such a thing as too much fiber? And would you know it if you got there?
I think the only way you're going to get too much fiber is using supplements. If you think about the fiber-containing foods, fruits, vegetables, you know, if you sit down, you know, to have a snack, are you going to overeat on apples? The fiber, the water, the chewing, you just end up full before you can take in too much. I think the one that people who, if they're not used to eating it, is there are fiber-containing foods, beans primarily, that do cause gas.
Yeah.
And people will say, I had too much of that because it, you know, it caused gas. It's a, you know, it's a side effect. It's
discomfort.
Yep. So you might want to be careful there that you don't overdo it on that in your first try.
You really push the fruits and vegetables, Beth.
Yes.
Beth Olson is our guest, and we're taking a look at fiber and the fact that I'm not getting as much of it. And I thought I was, and that maybe you aren't either. If you have questions for our guest, she's the UW Extension Specialist and Associate Professor at UW-Madison's Department of Food and Nutritional Sciences. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk@WPR.org. Vernon Boyd called in to say apples and pears are high in fiber but can have pesticide residue on their skin. He suggests pumpkins, raisins, and oatmeal as safer sources of fiber. Pesticides would be a question, Beth.
Yeah, so what I feel is most people eat so few fruits and vegetables that the benefit of increasing their fruit and vegetable intake will far outweigh any residues of pesticide that are present. If someone is very concerned, they could choose organic. But I think the benefits are so great to using fiber-containing foods that I personally do not worry as much about the pesticides. Doesn't mean in the long run we don't want to try to be careful with, you know, pesticides on our crops. That's somebody else's topic, I'm sure. But and, you know, not being indiscriminate, but
personally,
do you
buy organic if you can afford it, or is that something a luxury?
I don't often buy organic. I've not felt the price has been worth it. Now, I'm finding increasingly, particularly out of the produce aisle, say in the packaged food aisles, that some of the store brand organic foods, or sometimes they're on sale, either place, are the same price.
Yeah.
So, yep, then I go ahead and do it.
If the price is equivalent, you go ahead and you would go organic.
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense to me. But also being price conscious at the grocery store right now makes a huge amount of sense.
Oh, yeah. Don't forgo, you know, a vegetable because you can't afford the organic. Go ahead and get the other.
Yeah. What about when it comes to nuts and beans? Are these all the same for fiber? Are there nuts or beans that you would recommend above or beyond others?
No, although I'd say, you know, one thing about beans is canned beans is really a convenient source. You don't have to boil beans on the stove for a long
time. But then again, bag beans are very, very inexpensive.
They are. So if you have the time to boil them. The other thing about the canned beans is they're shelf stable. So, you know, they're quick. So you're making a salad. You could drain some garbanzo beans and put them on top. The only caveat I usually give about nuts is they are higher in fat. So if you're watching your calories, adding a cup of or a half cup even of nuts is going to add a fair number of calories. You're going to need to watch that. So I think using them a small amount as a snack is a great idea. Put them in a trail mix. And then using them, you know, a little bit as a garnish. Sprinkle them over a salad.
Sure. I'm actually going to... I'm going to plus one you here on, Beth. when it comes to alternatives for nuts that might work when it comes to fiber, some roasted chickpeas with your favorite seasoning on top, a little ranch seasoning maybe, or a little seasoned salt or whatever you like on top of that, a little oil to you rinse them, you dry them off, get them a little oil bath, and then you put them on some high temperature for a little bit. You get some crispy critters that have some fiber in it.
Yep, I have a recipe for that at home. It's an excellent one to do. And, you know, nowadays I would put in a plug for, you know, you can do them in something like air fryers. You know, there are a lot of things you can do now with the appliances that we have to do things quickly.
And that way you can get your fiber and your snack without your fats and no chips required, but still get some crunch.
Yes, exactly.
Let's go to Larry in Sugar Camp next. Larry, hi.
Hi. So my question is, I have been on a generic. I use Walmart sugar-free Metamucil for years and years. I'm on it for medical reasons. And I just switched to the true Metamucil to see if it was any better. You know, it's a lot more expensive. And I feel like I've got a lot more gas. Is there a difference between these, like the generics and the true Metamucil as far as what's in them?
I'm not aware that there is. I mean, they're pretty much psyllium, which is a fiber. It's possible. I don't know this is true. It's possible one is a little bit differently processed than the other. Mm-hmm. That might make it a little bit more fermentable, which would change the effect.
But if your body's not reacting well to it, if it's creating discomfort like it is for Larry, you could go back to the generic and save yourself a few bucks. It really, part of this is listening to your body, right? Seeing
yep.
how your body reacts to the foods and feeling when you're feeling good, feeling when you're feeling bad, and recognizing that it's garbage in, garbage out, and you've got to adjust accordingly.
Yeah, exactly. Often people say, well, I tried this, it caused this, mm-hmm. or I ate this and I loved it. You know, there are many, many, many foods, many, many versions. Pick the ones that work for you, both for price and the effect on your body and taste and all of that.
And we talk about this a lot with healthcare, is how individualized it's become. And I imagine our bodies are unique, and diet would be the same way, that you just listen to you and find out what works best for you.
Exactly. The dietary recommendations are for, you know, all healthy people.
Right. And they're generic averages.
Exactly.
And those generic averages don't exist in the real world. We're all these weird, you know, unique individuals.
They're a good starting point, and then from there you figure out what
works
for you.
Frames of reference.
Exactly.
Thank you for that. And Larry, thank you for the call. I hope you're feeling better. Ted and Madison emailed to say if the larger goal is to get people to eat more fiber, he doesn't think we should be downplaying supplementary fiber. Unfortunately, most Americans are addicted to convenience, which is part of the reason we eat so poorly. Ted goes on to say those who are willing to supplement are also often those who would not be willing to change the way they eat.
Yeah, and I think one of the things to do is look for, are there convenience foods high in fiber? So again, take those food labels. You're going to eat a breakfast cereal.
Mm-hmm.
That's very convenient, very quick. Look at the label. Does it have 0 grams of fiber in a serving, or does it have 2, 4, 6, 8? Same with breads that we just talked about. You could get a white bread or you can get a wheat bread. You're buying them in the same aisle. They're just as quick. So I think there's a lot of things that we can do that would be more convenient, even among the foods that we're choosing.
So just being mindful at the grocery store as opposed to having to try to be mindful once you get everything home.
Exactly. Yep.
What about popcorn?
Popcorn's a great source of fiber. Favorite snack of my mother and therefore of myself. And
low fat.
Low fat. Same thing. You can add a little seasoning if you want, little ranch seasoning. I had a friend who used to put in a little bit of cinnamon and dried fruit bits. It was almost like a trail mix in the popcorn. So
cinnamon. I would think maybe kettle corn, but then you're adding sugar. But cinnamon to straight up popcorn?
Yep. Yep. A little bit of cinnamon with a little bit of fruit bits that you can get
dried fruit bits.
Yeah, it was a great recipe.
Let's spend a moment more on microbiome. It's another, you know, sort of burgeoning field, but you've known about it for a long time. Mm-hmm. How does fiber interact with that in a way that makes our body feel the way we do?
Well, the bacteria in our gut ferment the fiber, and they make products that we do absorb that do seem to regulate our metabolism in some ways. So they've been different microbiome. What we see most often is when people look at the gut of people who are in a disease state, mm-hmm. their microbiome often looks different than someone who is healthy. Now, what to do about that is what we're not quite clear on yet. Did the disease cause that microbiome change, or is the microbiome causing the disease? If you alter it, do you alter the course of the disease? Maybe, maybe not. It is actually pretty hard to significantly alter your microbiome. It's affected by more than your diet.
Okay.
Your environment, you know, the people you're around, everything. And so you can change it with your diet, but you have to keep that diet change up. And it's only going to change so much. So as a field, I think it's promising, but really in its infancy, of us knowing exactly what to do to change it to have a specific outcome.
But we do know that fiber is beneficial and for all parts of our gastrointestinal system, and we should probably get as much as we can in the best ways we can find it.
Exactly. Well, you know, you see a lot of expensive supplements saying that it'll alter your microbiome, and I just think go back to the basics of, you know, these whole foods high in fiber, and you might have the best effect on your gut that you can.
Fruits, vegetables, beans, and
whole grains.
whole grains, popcorn with some cinnamon on it, with some fruit bits inside. I'm going to try that and have to get back to you, Beth. Hey, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
We'll have to do this again because I've got some work to do on my end, but we can catch up and I'll let you know how I'm doing.
Sounds good.
Beth Olson, UW Extension Specialist and Associate Professor in UW-Madison's Department of Food and Nutritional Sciences. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.